Hi, welcome to the RPG Academy's Show and Tell. Show and Tell is a show where we like to bring on someone in the RPG space who's doing something cool and talk about what they're working on. I'm Mo, and today we're going to talk to Jex Thomas, designer of the RPG Bump in the Dark.
Yeah, so my name is Jex Thomas. I use they, them pronouns, and I am a, part-time writer and game designer from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. In real life, I am a licensed mental health professional. I'm a parent. It's kind of the main stuff that I have going on. And Bump in the Dark is a tabletop role-playing game about community, chosen family, and beating the shit out of monsters. It's sort of in the same vein as like Buffy or maybe X-Files, Supernatural, things like that, kind of a monster of the week sort of game using the Forged in the Dark system. So it's very much tuned for kind of two phases of play, having kind of an investigation, then an action-packed showdown, as well as downtime that's full of, you know, character drama and things like that, all those things that we love to see on those kinds of shows.
Nice. I want to get to talking about your game, but first, what possessed you to get into RPG design?
Yeah, I'm an idiot, apparently, is the thing. I think that I can't really answer this question without talking about the game a little bit, because really it sort of started as an experiment. I'd done a little bit of design work in like kind of like I made a playbook for the game Monster of the Week. I rewrote some of the basic moves, and those were kind of like popular, at least on Reddit. And, after I'd found Blades in the Dark and other Forged in the Dark games, I was like, okay, I really like this. And I think I like it better than the regular kind of Powered by the Apocalypse stuff. What if I, as a, like kind of as a joke, made just converted Monster of the Week to Forged in the Dark? So that's sort of where it started. Obviously that did not, it's not that easy to just sort of port it over. And so I ended up writing my own game. I'm not, you know, this is not something that I'm looking to do full time, but it is something that I enjoy a lot. Have some good relationships with other people in the community who also, do game design, and that kind of keeps me rooted in it.
Nice. You took off a mouth, you bit off a mouthful trying to improve a game or redesign a game like Monster of the Week, because it's a pretty stellar game.
Oh yeah, it's one of my favorite games. I mean, in some ways my game is a love letter to that game.
Right. Like there's a certain point where I usually tell people it is kind of, in my opinion, the apex of what Powered by the Apocalypse can do. If people are going to play Bump in the Dark, by the way, awesome name.
Thank you.
For those who don't listen and don't play Forged in the Dark games, there's a tradition that these games that are inspired by that game, Blades in the Dark, end up kind of somewhere putting dark in the name. And so,
or Blades.
Or Blades, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or Blades in the name. So, Bump in the Dark, cool name. What kind of feelings are people going to get when they're playing Bump in the Dark?
Yeah, I mean, I think the game can accommodate a pretty wide variety of tones, but I kind of feel like it's, you know, if you think about like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but make it a little bit grittier. And it's also, the game is set in 1994, kind of in a sort of dying mining town. And so a lot of the vibes are kind of around this sort of like industrial collapse kind of thing. One of the things that I like about Forged in the Dark games is how tied in with their settings they are. So that was kind of an opportunity here. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, the game primarily is, you know, you're going to be investigating and hopefully discovering things and being really engaged that way. And then, you know, you face off against a monster or monsters, or if you want to go Scooby-Doo with it, the kind of people that are pretending to be monsters or really controlling the monsters. Right. And so there's a lot of action there. It's, you know, very much a game that leans into hard consequences, to use the kind of PBTA terminology. You know, it's a lot of hard moves, right? Which I think comes from that Blades in the Dark tradition. And so I think one thing that players are really encouraged to do is, you know, really kind of put it all out there and go for broke with what their character is doing, because if you're going to get hit hard anyway, you might as well try to, you know, get a lot out of it. And of course, they have tools to temper that, to, you know, sort of change the how risky the role is, to resist consequences that do happen. So that's like one part of the game. And then the other part of the game is downtime, which part of the reason why I'm doing a revised edition of the game right now is because I made the mistake of playing Slug Blaster, which is an incredible game. I love it so much. And it made me want to change a bunch of things in my game. One of those things is I borrowed the concept of beats for downtime. And so downtime is really, I think, kind of finely tuned for, you know, those kinds of stories that are going on in the background in things like Buffy and X-Files and you know, maybe even like Twin Peaks, you know, really kind of trying to up some of the melodrama, the connections between the characters. You know, I am as a role player and as a GM, someone who leans a lot into the emotion of role-playing games. Love bleed, you know, but so I think, you know, there's some of that feeling too, of just like, you know, character drama, relationships, maybe even a little bit of like kind of like social PvP kind of player versus player stuff going on.
Gotcha. So I have a couple really dumb questions.
I love them. I love dumb questions.
Number one, how is this different from Monster of the Week?
Yeah, that's not a dumb question at all. That's a really good question. I think the main ways that it's different than Monster of the Week, you know, one, the system is tuned differently, right? Forge in the Dark kind of is doing a different thing than Powered by the Apocalypse tends to do. So that's one piece. The other piece is that it is tied in very tightly with a specific setting. Like I said, it takes place in 1994 in this kind of like fictional 51st state called Ontonagon, which is based in real history of the northern Wisconsin and upper Michigan wanting to form a state together. And like the setting is like really baked into it. So there's also like a lot of like, there's like faction play going on in the background and things like that, that isn't typically something you would see in a Monster of the Week game. I mean, it depends on the GM. They might bring in some more of that setting stuff, some more of that background stuff, but the game itself doesn't, you know, it's not tied into any particular setting. So I think the game's also like more finely tuned for like exploring kind of themes that I'm interested in. So kind of talking about that, like sort of almost like post-industrial kind of collapse stuff, monster as metaphor. You know, it's probably not going to be shocking to anyone who reads the book that, you know, kind of capitalism is the real monster in the game, right? And so there are those pieces, like the thematic pieces as well. I think, you know, I think the other thing is just it offers a different gameplay experience. The investigation works very differently. The investigation in Bump in the Dark is more inspired by like games like Brindlewood Bay and External Containment Bureau, where you're kind of like, you know, building the story in a way as you go, rather than kind of finding like these preset sort of solutions that the GM is trying to kind of help you move towards. So there's a lot more, I think, player agency in sort of deciding the direction of the story. Like in a sense, you know, well, I mean, it's the case that the GM isn't preparing like the monster or like the answer to the mystery as we start a mystery, which we call a hunt. And so there's sort of like that, I think that you can play Monster of the Week in this way that's like really consistent with that kind of like writer's room format. But I think that this game really leans pretty heavily into that. And I think for me, what's really fun about doing it that way is I get to be kind of surprised when I'm running the game about like what we are fighting at the end as well. Right. And the game gives a lot of tools to be able to, you know, to handle that kind of play. I know not, you know, not everyone loves that kind of like loose improvisation. So there's, you know, roll tables and guidance for being able to actually do that at the table so that it can be really satisfying. And it can be that kind of like fun surprise that we are all together kind of figuring out where this thing is going.
Gotcha. That is a substantial, like different, substantially different approach to what Monster of the Week is doing. My next dumb question is, one of the things I love most about Monster of the Week is how evocative the playbooks are. Mm-hmm. What kind of character choices am I going to have in Bumping in the Dark?
Yeah, that's great. So I think in one way, the playbooks might be a little less evocative because Forged in the Dark tends to lean into this sort of thing where like you kind of have the same base for the characters and then these different pieces that you kind of slot in and out. Mm-hmm. In a sense, but I think that... I'm trying to actually bring up the list of them, which you know I should have memorized.
Everybody has everything planned out perfectly until they get punched right in the mouth. So
right, yeah, there we go. So the game has 7 playbooks, and those playbooks are the shield, which is kind of like a protector and fighter sort of type. The icon, which is like that might be an agent or some kind of liaison. You know, I think it could be Dale Cooper, but it could also be, you know, in the first campaign I ran, the icon was a journalist, right? So it doesn't have to be like an FBI agent or something. Scourges are magic users. The staves are kind of like scoundrels or crooks or maybe just sort of like, you know, they got something sketchy going on. Ravens are kind of like the thinkers, the watchers, the experts in things. Lances are occultists or zealots. They work for some kind of, you know, probably clandestine or occult organization. And then there's the unshaped, which is sort of like in Monster of the Week's term, the mundane, right? This is someone who's kind of a novice. They're an innocent. They're thrown into the life of monster hunting.
Look, I just work here.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I like how you're definitely doing that, you know, Fortune in the Dark thing of just kind of very broad, and then maybe the playbooks, them like the actions kind of help you refine your character. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely. The actions help refine the character. One thing that's also a little bit different about this game compared to, say, Blades in the Dark is that this game, I was going to say encourages, it sort of requires, I guess, characters to build beliefs and drives. And those are things that have like mechanical connections. So, you know, in Blades in the Dark, you'll have that XP trigger that's always like, you know, you leaned into your background and your beliefs, but those things are never really defined. You're like, right, I don't know what this is.
Right. I'm from the Dagger Isles and that means a thing, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And so I always felt disappointed by that and really like, you know, sort of things that tie the characters to the world and to each other. And so I think that the beliefs and kind of the background piece is really where you can differentiate your characters the most and kind of how they see the world and what is pushing them into this life of hunting monsters.
Nice. You just provoked another question. If I were to play Bump in the Dark, could I port it out of your preset world? Or is it very integrated and is that like going to require a lot of picking apart?
Yeah. Oh, that is such a great question. So one of the things that the kind of upcoming revised edition, there's going to be a crowdfunding campaign on BackerKit. And one of the pieces of that is kind of offering some guidance around things like changing the game, alternate rules, considerations for changing the setting. I get it. You might want to play this type of game that's Forged in the Dark, but isn't about fighting monsters while the slow decline of industry is happening, right? You might not care about that, right? You might not care about the effects of like late capitalism on small communities, right?
Or you might care about all of those things, but in Reno.
Right. Oh, exactly. Exactly. Great point. I don't think it's that difficult to swap out the setting. I think that there are some important considerations that you have to, think about. But I think if you wanted to, instead of do Last Pine, it's the name of the town in 94, instead you wanted to do, Stranger Things, right? In Hawkins, right. Indiana, or Ghostbusters in 1984, Prague in 1947, or kind of like Reno in the present day, right?
Right.
I think you can do those things pretty easily. I think really the main things that you would need to be thinking about is having a couple of locations ready and some factions ready. And you don't need to start with like a whole list of like 25 factions or something, right? You can start with two, right? Or just have something to kind of that's giving the world a little bit of a shape. Hmm. And then I think the other considerations, are going to be like thinking about tone and genre. I think Bump can accommodate a wide range of tones. But I think the more you change the setting, the more that's going to kind of play with like, where is the tone at? If you're trying to play a game that's more like, Scooby-Doo, that's going to feel very, very different than Bump in the Dark without changing stuff. And then thinking about like the time, there's a few reasons I set the game in 1994. But one of the main reasons is that, mobile phones technically exist, but are not very omnipresent, right? So you can't just Google the solution to something, right? You can't just be like, oh, I'm going to go on Wikipedia for vampires and learn all about vampires. And I think that to me, that's a really fun thing that makes investigation a little bit more challenging. There's nothing wrong with being able to do that. I've heard, listened to Monster of the Week actual plays, where it takes place in the present day and everybody has cell phones, and that's one of the things they do is they'll just like look up things, and that can still be really fun. It's just different, right? It's very different in terms of kind of like what the hunters have access to. So kind of time and technology level, and then thinking about the factions, because I think where a lot of the themes of the game come in to play is going to be with the factions. They're kind of tuned in this game to be, you have the sort of evil mining magnate, and you have demon worshiping occultists, and whatever else. So thinking about what kinds of factions you have in the game are going to do a lot to push it in the direction of like what kinds of like themes or tone you want to explore. Also, like, you can go in without a theme, right? Like, I'm someone who thinks a lot about theme. I am a fiction writer as well. But like, you don't have to think about that shit, right? Like, you can just, I'm going to make up a setting that's cool. And I think that it's not that hard to port things over. A couple of considerations would be like, one of the items that every character has on their sheet is they can have a walkie-talkie or a pager, right? Well, you're probably going to change that to a smartphone, right? Or whatever.
Right.
So little things like that, but I don't think it would be that difficult. I take that back. There's the Open Hearth gaming community. There's some folks right now who are running Bump in the Dark through that community, and they have changed the setting to Silent Falls, which is the setting for Alice is Missing. And so they played this Alice is Missing game, and now they've been playing all these other games that they're setting in the same world. And it sounds like it's been going really well doing Bump in that setting. I think that if you want to change the setting, you'd certainly have my blessing. Not that you need it, but
thank you for not policing my table.
Right.
How are you supporting GMs running this? It sounds there may be a lot of moving parts. What buttons can GMs push to make things happen, and what do GMs have to manage?
Yeah. So there's a pretty, you know, I think robust section for the GM in the book that, you know, part of it is sort of offering like, you know, this is sort of what your agenda is. This is kind of how you focus. These are the, you know, kind of actions that you make, and things kind of slot into those, just like GM moves in a PBTA game. Mm. Along with that, you know, the play kit includes like basically a character sheet for the keeper, the GM, that is going to have like the most important stuff that you track. Like, you know, I think the big things that you're going to be tracking, you know, in any given session, each hunt has a countdown clock that's going right. to be either 4, 6, or 8 steps. So you'll need to track that. You'll need to track, one of the mechanics in the game that's a little unique compared to other Forge in the Dark games is strings, which are basically player gives you. As GM, a consequence to kind of cash in later, which I think is a fun. So that's something to kind of keep track of as well. You know, there's in the play kit, there's spots for tracking the factions. And again, you know, I recommend don't bring in all the factions, right? Pick a couple that sound interesting and start right. there and right. build from that. And I think it's so much easier to manage mm-hmm. when you're going in that way. I mean, I remember when I first started playing D&D and like, I am like, oh, I need to know all of this lore to be able to run this game. And of course yep. I didn't, but I thought I did. And that made me very anxious. Right. So start with two factions, start with a piece of the world that seems interesting to you. And I think that's going to make it a lot easier to manage. We do also have the game, or at least the first edition of the game, is available on Roll, which is a virtual tabletop platform. And that has some kind of built-in ways to help track some stuff and kind of mm-hmm. stay on top of these things. Primarily, though, it's really, you know, following what the GM section of the book tells you to do. And I think it gives a lot of good tools for staying on top of stuff and kind of running the game in the way that seems to work best. There's also like, telling you how to run a hunt, how to create your own hunt. There are a bunch of random tables in the book. So, you know, if you're like, oh, I have to think, I'm trying to prep this hunt, but I can't think of any clues. Well, there's random tables you can look at that are going to help inspire that. Or if you want to improvise a hunt, which, I have done. I think that it's doable. It's a little harder, but I think that it's absolutely doable. So those kinds of tools as well, lists of names, lists of, like other small towns, lists mm-hmm. of businesses that you might find in like the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, right? Pasty shops, you know, to bring in the setting into that stuff as well.
Nice. If people wanted to learn more about Bump in the Dark, are there any APs or anything like that in the world?
Yeah. So Open Hearth they used to be the Gauntlet gaming community until the gaming community and the publishing side split off, and now they're called Open Hearth. There are a number of video recordings of sessions. I think two campaign or, you know, short series that I ran, this short series right now that's set in this world of Alice is Missing, run by Donna. And there's also, we are currently working on doing a podcast of the current campaign that I'm running. Mm-hmm. The reason I say working on is, as you probably know, editing is a beast, mm-hmm. Especially if you also have, you know, full-time job and, mm-hmm. you know, kids and all that stuff. So we've recorded about 21 sessions. We've edited 3 of them.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So hopefully, our plan is to just finish the campaign and then finish the editing, and not give ourselves too much pressure and just put it out when it's ready. Right. But that is something that I'm excited about. I think it's been a really fun campaign. And, my kind of home group really leans into, you know, sort of like what makes the most interesting story rather than like what's the, you know, what's the like safest thing to do or what's the best thing to do, you know?
Right.
And I think that that makes it a lot more fun to listen to as well.
Nice. Other than that, how can listeners support you?
We can go to bumpinthedarkrpg.com. That's going to have a link to all the storefronts where you can buy the game. It currently also has a link to the crowdfunding campaign on BackerKit, where you can back the revised edition of the game. The original edition of the game had a lot of stock art, so I'm really proud to say that it's, I think, with like 30 pieces of new art that are original and commissioned for the game, and they're grounded in the setting, and they look so good, and I'm so happy about them. You know, and it'll be, I think a nice, sturdy premium edition of the book. I think it's going to be worthwhile. It's always tough asking someone to buy something they may have already purchased. So we're really trying to make it worthwhile, right? Make this book something that, is worth having, is easy to reference at the table, looks good on your bookshelf. 'Cause of course, as we all know, looking at the bookshelf behind me, most of us buy lots of RPGs and don't ever actually play them. So we want to make sure it's going to stand out or at least fit in nicely with those other books on your shelf as well.
Nice.
But yeah, that runs until July 7th. So that's the best place. That's the best way you can support the game.
And do you have like a Discord or are you on social media? Is there a way people can follow you and be in touch with Jex?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a Discord server for Bump in the Dark that is linked on the at bumpinthedarkrpg.com. It is a tight-knit but slow-moving community. There's, you know, we'll have like big bursts of conversation for a while and then it's kind of dies down, and that's okay because I feel like it's a lot of work to kind of keep the communities always talking.
Right.
And I love communities that are like that. And also it's nice to have a place where it's kind of like, yeah, we just kind of check in when we have something to talk about. And it's, I'm not selling this very well probably for the people who are listening. But yeah, there is a Discord community. I am on Blue Sky is probably where I stay the most current, at Jex J. Thomas. I have a co-host. I have a Tumblr. I'm bad at using them. I have a newsletter as well that you can also sign up at the bumpinthedarkrpg.com. And that's really mostly right now me talking about the game and things like that, movies I watch. I think I mentioned earlier, I'm a mental health professional. So sometimes I talk about things that are interesting from the field of psychology. It tends to be pretty varied, but definitely right now with the crowdfunding campaign going on, kind of hyper-focused on talking about the game in different ways. Right. Yeah.
Reasonably so. It's like, hey, during Christmas time, we talk about Christmas.
Right. What do you mean we can't talk about Easter right now?
I mean, you can, but it's not pressing.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, Jex. Great chatting you about Bump in the Dark. I don't know if you see the wheels turning in my head. I have definitely tried to shove some stuff into Monster of the Week that doesn't necessarily fit, you know, in the spirit of running a campaign. And it sounds like it might fit better in Bump in the Dark. So,
cool.
You know,
yeah.
I may be talking to you about Reno.
Sure, I would love to talk about that. One thing that someone in the Discord community is actually working on right now is trying to develop play sets for the game. So kind of similar to what Girl by Moonlight does, but basically these kind of like preset settings. That would, you know, kind of change the pieces of the game that you would need to change in order to make that doing it in a different setting easier.
Right.
This is a fan, someone in the community that's doing it. So it's not something that there's any like time pressure on. So I don't know, you know, when that might get completed, but it's definitely something that, you know, people have been thinking about, that I've been thinking about, of like ways to make it even easier for people to kind of come in with their own setting. Right. It'd be fun to do things like, the monsters are like, gig workers, you know, kind of like, I Hunt or that podcast, mm-hmm. Bubble, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a fun idea. It doesn't make any sense at all in the current setting of Bump in the Dark.
Right.
But, you know, it could be fun to come in with like a play set that's able to tweak the game in that way. Or for Reno.
Yeah. All right. We will talk. Thank you so much for your time, Jex. Good luck with your crowdfunding. And thanks for coming to talk to us.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for having me. All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the RPG Academy podcast. We do this show out of love for the hobby and the desire to be ambassadors, welcoming more people into this community. All of our website content will always be free to use and utilize. But there are expenses related to the show, and if you enjoy what we do here, then please consider supporting us in some way. You can do so as simply as rating or reviewing us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. If you're going to purchase anything through Amazon or DriveThruRPG, consider using our affiliate links first, and then we'll get a small percentage sent back to us. You can do a single direct donation through PayPal using the paypal.me/TheRPGAcademy, or consider joining our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/TheRPGAcademy. And for a donation as low as $1 a month, you'll get access to lots of extra goodies, including bonus minisodes, invites to monthly one-shot games, one-sheet adventures, and more. Please consider following us on Twitter and Facebook, or join our Discord, where we like to try to keep the conversation going with our fans as best we can, and are always looking to talk and chat more. Or do none of that. Just continue to listen and enjoy our show, because honestly, that's enough. Thanks, and remember, if you're having fun, you're doing it right. We'll see you next time. The music used for our intro and outro is Fly a Kite by Spectacular Sound Productions, used under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license.
All right. Did we not talk about anything? Is there anything you want to restate?
I think that felt okay. Some of my rambling about the Discord wasn't great. But I think, yeah.
Listen, your Discord sounds very appealing to me because I don't need to be on a Discord where like 100 people are in conversation every day.
Yeah.
Because I'm on too many Discords.
Right, yeah, same. And like, you know, even like, you know, like Sam's, like the Dice Exploder one, like isn't as busy as some, but even that sometimes will be like, oh, there's been too much talking.
Yeah,
never catch up.
Yeah.
I am
the forever lurker of Discord.
Yeah. I have two that I post in very regularly, and then the rest I'm just like every once in a while I'm like, okay, what's going on here?
Exactly. I'm gonna end recording.
Cool.